a caddy friend of mine caddied for me probably a dozen times on the PGA Tour over the last like 5 years. And he was like, dude, your short game is ridiculous. Like, you should give some tips to people as to how they can like improve their short game and do it on Instagram. And I'm like, I'm not even really on Instagram. I have no interest in being on Instagram. And he's like, no, you should really do it. And so anyway, he filmed a bunch of videos for me. And that was sort of how it started.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, Parker, you're live from Arizona. Everybody on social media knows you as the short game chef. That's your alter ego, if you will.
That's right, man. That's right. Yeah, used to be a body surfer in Hawaii growing up, and then a little volleyball, and then golf, and then found the love for the game and played on the tour and won out there, and then now been passing along some of my knowledge and information as a short game coach.
Before we get into the short game specific stuff, I want to ask about that. So did you play it, like, what was your journey through professional golf? Did you play college and then grind like mini tours or KFT or whatever the tour was then? And then make it on tour, or what was that path for you?
Yeah. So I was, sort of a mediocre kind of recruit out of high school. Kind of got a 50% scholarship to go to UCLA, and redshirted my first year, and then played every event the next 4 years, and really just kind of found my love of like the grind in those sort of 4 years. And had some wrist problems at the end of my senior year, had a three cortisone shots, ended up having to get surgery to repair a torn TFCC in my wrist. And so it took the next year and basically spent like six months in a cast. And so I met a sports psychologist at that time in Hawaii, who was a world renowned sports psychologist named Dr. Don Green. And we randomly met. Not so random, but we met, and he gave me a bunch of books, and we just started working on like my mind and how I process things and how I would feed information into my brain, my supercomputer, and then how that information then would help me with golf. And so I spent the next 6 months kind of just reading, and then played some amateur golf over the summer, US amateur, and then turned pro that fall of 2003, and then spent the next 2 years playing mini tours. So every major mini tour that you could, the Gateway Tour, the Hooters Tour, the Adams Tight Lies Tour, the Spanos Tour, played on every one of those tours, won on every one of those tours, sort of on my way to like going through Q school and all that stuff. So that was kind of my journey. It was sort of like just a slow ascent, and just tons of reps and traveling all over the country, trying to chase it and learning a lot about myself and my tendencies and where I was good, where I needed work. And then finally got through Q school, spent 1 year on the Corn Ferry Tour, and finished 29th on the money list on the Corn Ferry Tour my first year, which got me into final stage of Q school. And then I got my tour card that year.
Okay. And then you play on the tour. Then how do you, I'm always curious how people get into teaching, like especially somebody that played at the highest level. Oh, you said, obviously you love it, but like one, how do you get into teaching? And then two, like, obviously you found this, I don't even want to call it a niche, but like expertise in the short game, right? Like that's what you're known for. So how do you, like what does that look like? You just wake up one day and decide I want to teach? Or is it like, hey, man, like you're really good at this? Like what goes through your brain? And then can you kind of give that to other players that are also trying to do the same? And you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, this could be something. I could turn this into a business.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great question because I think it's a weird, like, sort of confluence of things that sort of happened. Number one, my dad is like sort of a legendary volleyball and basketball coach in Hawaii. So I was always sort of around coaching. I was always around him being, you know, building teams and being a coach. It's sort of like hardwired into me. My brother's a volleyball coach over at USC women's volleyball. So it's already sort of, I think, part of my DNA. But a couple of things happened. Number one was a caddy friend of mine was like, hey, he had caddied for me probably a dozen times on the PGA Tour over the last like 5 years. And he was like, dude, your short game is ridiculous. Like, you should give some tips to people as to how they can like improve their short game and do it on Instagram. And I'm like, I'm not even really on Instagram. I have no interest in being on Instagram. And he's like, no, you should really do it. And so anyway, he filmed a bunch of videos for me. And that was sort of how it started. The other part of it, and he helped me sort of create that. He's like, you got to create a name. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, not just my own name. And he's like, no, you got to come up with something interesting so that it's catchy. So that's where Short Game Chef was sort of born. As I started thinking, well, I'm going to be making videos basically short game specific only. So the name's going to be Short Game Something. And so I was thinking like Guru, Short Game Wizard, but both of those kind of sound, you know, very sort of self-serving, right? And it's like, no, I want to be giving something to the people. I want to be giving information. And so I came up with Short Game Chef because I'm like, I'm giving you recipes for like, hey, for this lie and this particular shot, these are the things that you need to include in your recipe to get this shot accomplished. So that was one part of it. The other part of it was I went to do a lot of PGA Tour live broadcasting. And I probably did 15 of those. And you're like in a box and watching a screen and you're calling golf for like 12 hours a day for 4 days straight. Right. And so you're having to really learn how to communicate properly, how to really take a 5 minute thought and boil it down into about a 12-second sound bite, because the producer is going to move on to the next shot or to the next group, whatever it might be. So you really got to take, you know, these big thoughts, these big, you know, ideas that you've got on like, hey, I've got this theory on Jordan Spieth and why he does this or that. And you got to boil it down into like a 12 to 20 second clip of like, I got to get my communication in and out so that the producer can move on. And that was really helpful to take my communication skills from being mediocre to being great. And I think that's, you know, part of coaching is the information. Part of coaching is the, you know, recognizing the patterns of that particular individual in front of you, putting the pieces of the puzzle in the right sort of sequence. And then the third part is the being able to communicate it in a way that's going to be digestible for that individual. And that part of it is really interesting. And there's a few layers to that where it's, well, how does the person learn? Are they visual? Do you need to spell it out for them? Are they more feel? There's a variety of ways to kind of get to the spot of here's the information. All of a sudden it gets inputted into that person and then boom, it clicks. And now the light bulb goes off. You can see it in that person. So the communication skills part of it is a big part of why somebody is a great coach or isn't.
Yeah, well, obviously it's working for you and I truly enjoyed our time. I learned a lot. And like I said, when I left, like, you know, I've watched a ton of your Instagram content, a lot of the YouTube videos you've done with other, you know, podcast guys or whoever it might be. And it was like a light bulb for me, like actually doing it in person and getting like the full communication, seeing more like, you know, you can watch something on TV or reel and you might think somebody is saying something. And then when you know, do it in person and actually, you know, they can put you in the right spots or get you to feel the right feels, it's something completely different. Right. And so like I resonate with it. And two, my like first line of questioning just in talking about short game in general is, you know, for like a lot of players, even at the elite level, how much of it is like some guys just have it, like they just have a good short game byproduct of maybe what they do in their full swing or they grew up a certain way, and how many guys like it's a struggle for them and they're just trying to almost get by? Because I feel like for whatever reason, when it comes to short game, it seems like it's one or the other. Like some guys either have a phenomenal short game and they're really good at it and they don't have to spend too much time, and other guys are like grinding, always going through new feels, always working on new techniques. And it's almost like this complex math equation they've got to figure out.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's sort of the age old question of like, you know, can a great driver of the golf ball also be a great short gamer? And I think it's difficult. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, Kyle Berkshire isn't winning on the PGA Tour every week. It's because, you know, like what he does to smash the golf ball 400 yards is really detrimental to wedge game, slowing the golf ball down. And there's, you know, at that elite level, you know, there's the guys that make it there understand how to really compress the golf ball. They understand how to build in that shaft lane, really destroy the golf ball, really compress it and really send it. So to be able to sort of remove all those sort of ball speed accumulators and then be able to soften the golf ball and hit these little pitches and these shots that are going high, soft over a bunker or over a tongue of rough. And then all of a sudden you got to go high, soft and slow the golf ball down. You know, you've got to use a different skill set. And I think that's where it's like, you almost have to, you know, be good at compartmentalizing. All right, in this compartment, we've got compression, smash the golf ball. And in this compartment, we've got slow the golf ball down. And there's different shots around the green where you want to speed the golf ball up. And there's different shots around the green where you want to slow it down. So even that subset within, you know, short game, it's like, yeah, we need a totally different skill set for bunker shots versus a pitch shot. We don't want to make the same motion for those two shots. And so I think that the guys that are the best at doing it compartmentalize it the best. It's not just the same, you know, full swing to short game. It's not just the same. Like you've got to compartmentalize it. And I think the guys that pick up on it the best are the guys that are able to sort of segment it out in their head of like, okay, for my driver, this is the swing that I'm using. For irons, these are the keys that I'm using. For pitch shots inside of 50 yards off of fairway lie, this is what I'm doing. For shots out of the thick rough, this is what I'm doing. And if you can kind of compartmentalize those things, then you've got the greatest chance of sort of having a high level of success at each of those different skill sets.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought this up, because this has been the hardest part of explaining our time together for all of my friends. And just for context, like, you know, a lot of people that listen to the podcast, you know, are trying to get better at golf. Like we try and tailor a little bit more towards maybe like the country club golfer or somebody that's, you know, really grinding, playing a lot of golf. You know, it's not necessarily like, you know, how to break 100 or just like tips and tricks. We can get into the weeds sometimes, like whether we're talking equipment or technique or whatever it might be. As a product of that, a lot of my followers like know who you are. We talked about it, and I tell them my light bulb moment was what you just said, which was we're trying to slow the ball down around the greens. And like you caught on right away that I'm a good driver of the ball, golf ball. Like I can create speed. You've never seen me hit a driver, but like you just said, like I can tell you probably hit the ball far. I'm like, yeah, I do. That's why I struggle around the greens. So I've tried to explain to them kind of the it's not even a theory, but what you talk about in terms of how to slow the golf ball down around the greens, and almost using, you know, the upper body, the rotation to create speed as opposed to like the hands or the wrist hinge. Can you talk about this concept for a second? Because I've absolutely butchered it when I've tried to explain it to people. But the way that I've explained it is effectively like, look, around the greens, if you get too handsy, too wristy, and you're creating too much speed, it gets a lot harder to control your distances. It gets a lot harder to control your trajectories. And by the end of our lesson, I was hitting, I don't know, maybe 20 yard chip and pitch shots. And you were like, dude, you literally can't rotate hard enough to get this ball to the pin. And it was like a hard thing for me to comprehend that, like, you know, normally I can just blade one of these things and hit it 40 yards. So if you could, you know, explain this concept better than I have, that would be phenomenal for the listeners.
So, I mean, I think that the way that I look at it is that there's places in our setup, our backswing, in our downswing that we can create ball speed. So if you were to set up to it and have a bunch of shaft lean forward or turn the face in and close it, the ball is going to travel faster than it would if you had the shaft lean neutral and the club face open. It's just plain simple facts. Like you can do things at setup to increase your ball speed or to decrease your ball speed. And you can do things in the backswing to increase your ball speed. So that would be like really setting the hands early, taking a long backswing, moving way forward. Like all those things are going to create the ball going faster off the club head. Now, if you're hitting a 10 yard, 15 yard, 20 yard sort of chip or pitch shot, and you've got a backswing that looks like this, you're most likely going to want to slow down or start to dump that angle out on the way into the golf ball. It's going to lead to a lot of inconsistent strikes. It's going to lead to the golf ball potentially not spinning as much as it should, or as it could. And you're going to get a variety of heights. For the most part, what I see with people that do that is it's just a lot of inconsistencies because there's not acceleration on the way through the golf ball. It's a lot of slowing down. It's a lot of backing out. It's a lot of throwing the hands and not sure, am I throwing the hands at the right time or am I throwing it too late? So what I like to do is just have my players understand where the ball speed accumulators are. Have you managed them in the right way at setup and in your backswing? And if you have, then that gives you the most, the greatest chance to actually have some, to deliver some speed through the shot and not fear going too far. I think if you talk to any like high level golfer, like you're talking to the people that are watching this, that are messaging you, high level golfers, if you're a right-handed golfer, high level, what's the one miss that you despise? Long and left, right? We all despise long and left.
Yeah, nobody likes to see the ball move left.
So if long and left is your miss, right? And so let's just say hooded club face, right? You create all these ball speed accumulators. Your miss is long and left. What are you going to do on the way through? Because you know you don't want to miss long and left. You're going to go
and
that
you're
way.
Dump
you're
behind it.
Slow down, and that's where sort of drop kick, maybe chunk, club face stays open, high knuckleball out to the right. That's usually sort of what I see as the pattern, right? But that fear starts with long and left. And then you then make your adjustments on the way through to make sure that you don't miss it long and left. So what we do is just sort of reorganize your puzzle pieces to get you in a spot to where it's like, all right, set up, backswing. I haven't created anything that's going to make me miss it long and left. So now on the way through, I can rip through it as much as I want. And that's a great feeling. I think like for you to be like, oh my gosh, like I can rotate as much as I want and not miss it long, not have a fear of missing it long and left because I'm not going to miss it long and left. That's a freeing thing for any type of a player from low to high handicap. That's a great freeing feeling.
Yeah. It's been hard because like obviously we did our lesson outside. Now I'm stuck in here where it's negative 17 degrees today and I can only do so much on my mats at home, but it was a light bulb moment for me. And then the other thing we kind of talked about, like, and in a lot of your posts you talk about is, you know, effect, like how to use the bounce correctly. And so I'd like a little bit of maybe, you know, I generally understand bounces and grinds and all of that stuff. Obviously I know you use all the Titleist stuff, which is, I mean, they're known for how good their wedges and balls are, which we'll talk about in a second, but,
let me grab a wedge.
Yeah. Perfect. I want to, my line of questioning now goes into different types of bounces around the greens. And then when you say using the bounce correctly. I don't think people truly appreciate or understand what that means. So when we're talking about like using the bounce correctly, what does that mean to you? And how does a player actually utilize the bounce? Because everybody goes in, they buy a bunch of different bounces on their wedges and it's like, yeah, I need more bounce because I need more forgiveness or I need maybe less bounce out of the bunker, right? But nobody truly, I think, actually comprehends maybe until they're at the elite level, like what that means. So can we talk about bounce and grinds and wedges for a second?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating discussion, right? Obviously bounce matters, right? I mean, that's why, you know, Vokey has such a huge variety of options. Bounce matters. Where you play your golf really matters. How you deliver your downstroke and how you are delivering the golf club to the golf ball, it matters. And so with that being said, let's say if you're playing in the Northwest, right? Seattle, it's going to be pretty wet up there. You're going to want something that has more bounce on it. You're going to want something that's going to be able to get you out of that turf just slightly quicker. If you played up in Seattle and it's just wet and muddy all the, like probably 9 months of the year, and you use something with, let's just say zero bounce, even though they don't make anything with zero bounce. You played something with zero bounce, that club, even if you hit the golf ball perfect, that club's just going to keep traveling down. There's going to be nothing that's going to sort of help it surf on top of the ground. And so you would want something in Seattle where it's 8, 10, 12, 14 degrees of bounce. If you're playing somewhere in like really dry, you know, Midland, Texas, somewhere where it's just really, really firm, you're going to want something with less bounce. You're going to want something with like 4, 6, even 8 degrees of bounce is okay too, but 4, 6, or 8 to be able to not have it bounce too much. Because if you get it to bounce too much, now all of a sudden you're bouncing and blading the golf ball. So you want something that can sit, you know, you kind of see here, like let's see, this is an 8, but you can see the back edge right here. That's really kind of what you're paying attention to. This is going to kind of be the guy that's going to help get you out of the turf. So the more that this is sort of shaved off, you will see that this will be like, this one's got much more on this back edge, right? It's a much cleaner, higher type of a back edge. This has more bounce than this one does. This one's got some polishing on this back edge. So that will play with less bounce. This one will play with more bounce. So you just sort of got to, number one, understand where it is that you're playing your golf. What are the course conditions? Do you have bunkers that are like super thick, or do you have bunkers that are like super firm? If you've got the bunkers that are super firm, you're going to want something that's going to get underneath, right? You're going to want something that's going to get underneath that golf ball. So something with four
less
degrees
bounce,
of bounce.
Like four correct. Or 6 degrees, yeah.
Yes, correct. Correct. So that's really what like the bounce, you got to kind of imagine that the bounce is going to like almost like a, I mean, I grew up surfing, right? Body surfing, surfing on longboards, shortboards. Like you're going to want to think of the bounce as something that's going to help keep you surfing on top of the wave, right? You don't want this thing, it's called purling, right? When you get the nose going into the wave, you don't want this thing purling. We want to keep that thing really sort of gliding on top of the wave of the ocean, so to speak.
Yeah. So then, so now understanding bounce and then actually applying it towards your shot, right? Like, is the reason that you're an advocate for, you know, like when we first set up, I was all over the place, right? Like behind me, my feet were left and my club was right. And like, I was manipulating everything. And then you had me putt, and you know, I was very like square, right? You're like, okay, like you know how to set up for a putt. Like, why don't you set up for your chips like that? Is the reason that you're an advocate for kind of like ball, middle of the stance, maybe even slightly forward, and then more like neutral club, like more of a neutral club, because then you're effectively using the bounce in the correct way, whereas opposed to like if you've got the handle forward and you're kind of manipulating the face, now you're kind of throwing all those things out the door. I'm not trying to lead the witness, but it's kind of clicking for me. Like, now is that why you want to set up that way? Because now you're using whatever the club is supposed to be doing in the right way.
Yeah, I think that there's a handful of reasons. I would say that putting, you know, putting, there's a lot of similarities between putting, bump and run, and pitch shots. And especially with how we're sort of moving our body, how we're keeping our lower body somewhat quiet. And obviously that your lower body will start moving more, your upper body will start moving more as you get further and further away from the hole to start to generate more speed. But the reason I like to, and I know there's, you know, like James Ridyard, who's a phenomenal short game coach as well out of the UK, he would agree with this in saying that it's important to build a stock shot, something that is just like very sort of vanilla, neutral, however you want to describe it. It's important to build that sort of stock shot, because then you can then hit it higher off of that. You can then also hit it lower off of that based on shaft positioning, club face positioning, ball positioning. But if your sort of stock shot is ball off your right toes or maybe outside of your right toe, then all you've got is the one that comes in like really low and really hot. And then you're trying to really open that club face up to try to then slow that golf ball down. But the second you open that club face way up, there's a lot of compensating that you've got to do. So I'd rather start with ball position just barely forward of center. Shaft is going to be neutral to slightly a little bit forward. And then let's be able to hit that stock standard vanilla shot off of a fairway lie. Let's be able to start understanding how to do that first. And then you can then start building in the one that we're open the face. Maybe the ball goes half a ball further forward. Now you can start hitting it slightly higher. Or you start going off your right toe, your right heel, shaft goes a little more forward. You make a similar motion, ball starts coming out of a lower window, but you're still making that same motion without feeling like you're having to make all sorts of adjustments from if your stock standard is ball off your right toe, shaft is well forward. Well, you've got that one shot, right? Which is fine, but how are you going to go mid trajectory? How are you then going to go high trajectory? I mean, I would argue till I'm blue in the face that the shots that you need around the green have a lot more to do with height and trajectory mixed in with some spin. But the thought that every shot is coming in, you know, launching at 26, 28 from inside of 20 or 30 yards, I will argue till I'm blue in the face that that's not the shot that PGA Tour players are hitting, nor is it the shot that is needed around the greens or most needed around the greens. I think a blend, every single PGA Tour player that I've worked with, probably close to like 30 or 40 PGA Tour, LPGA, Champs Tour, Korn Ferry Tour, probably over 45 of them, if you add them all together, every single one of them to a person has come to me and said, I want to be able to, inside of 30 yards, be able to flight it a little bit higher and maintain spin. Not one of them has said to me like, hey, I want this ball to come out lower with more spin.
They could all hit it low with spin, right? Like that's not the hard
shot. You throw it off your back foot, you lean the shaft forward, hit ball first, and this thing comes out low with some spin. But that's not a shot when you're playing greens that are somewhat firm, when you're playing pins that are tucked, when you're playing greens that have, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 stint meter speed to them. You want a golf ball that's going to land with a little bit of descent here and have some grab. That's really kind of the blend that we're really looking for. So starting with those sort of principles of, hey, let's get us to something in the neutral area. And then let's get creative and go high. Let's get creative and go low. But we've at least got a place that we're starting that we can always kind of come back to.
Yeah. And how much does the ball, so like, obviously when you're talking with pros, like they really care about the ball, but even for like elite amateurs or, you know, call it low handicap players, how much of the ball affects this? I mean, do you talk about the different, you know, balls? Like obviously now, you know, Titus probably has four different types of balls that guys on tour play. I mean, primarily the one and the X, right? But, you know, there's AVXs and there's left dashes and the whole thing. You know, JT always talks about like, if a ball doesn't perform good with my wedges, I don't want it. Other people talk about it being off the tee first. What's your theory on the ball and how people need to decide which ball to use around the greens?
Okay, so this is really interesting. So I met up with the head of marketing for Titleist at the PGA show just in January. And I asked him basically the same question. I was like, what are we supposed to do? Like, how are we supposed to choose our golf ball? And he said, start with the putter and then like start close and work backwards. And I had heard that JT liked the sound of, I think it was the Pro V1 X. He liked the sound of the X off the putter face more than anything else, more than any other golf ball. So he started with that. And then he worked into his wedges, started to see like, okay, can I spin this? Am I getting the right trajectories, the right feels, the right spin rates that I want? And then he started working back, and then they can do a lot more tweaking with the hybrid, the 7-wood, the 5-wood, the driver. With they can do a lot more tweaking with shafts and with the wrenches in the neck to get the settings in the right spot to be able to fit that golf ball to what the rates, the spin rates, the launch rates, all that stuff. They can do a lot more manipulating with those higher clubs than they can with the wedges. And so start small, see what you like with the putter, what sounds good. Obviously, that like JT's like next level feel wise, you know, like hands, feel, audio, all that stuff. So I would say maybe for, you know, your high level amateur and even like just regular amateur golfers that weekend warriors, start with the wedges, see if the wedges are performing the right way, and then work your way back into the driver.
I love that. I've never heard that
it's
before.
I'd never heard it either. And it was coming straight from the head of golf ball marketing for Titleist. And I was like, wow, that's a really neat way of like looking at it. And I thought it was really, really cool. But it's going to be really difficult, you know, to like some people have super high spin rates and they can use like a left dash ball that doesn't have as much spin, right? But other people that maybe need the spin, if they are like, hey, I'm attached to this left dash ball because it goes far, and then all of a sudden around the greens they can't spin it, they're going to be really trying to search for some spin, and they're going to do some funky things with their action to go searching for that spin. And I've heard of a couple of people that have been like, that have really struggled, like high level players that have really struggled because they used that left dash ball that was going forever, they were attached to that, but yet they suffered around the greens because they couldn't create enough spin. And so they had to go try to manufacture it, and they weren't manufacturing it in the right way.
Yeah. Makes complete sense.
It led to big like chipping problems.
I got one more question, and I know you gotta go cause you got your Uber coming. I had a reader, or I guess a follower, write in and ask about how important green reading is for short game and any tips on how to become a better green reader. And this is also something that hit home for me because I always struggle with the, you know, like I can hit a good chip or I can hit a good putt, but the ball doesn't go in or doesn't maybe get as close as I thought because I wasn't reading the complex of the green right. You know, when it comes to short game, I think that's obviously a big part of it. Like you can hit a good chip all day, but if you didn't read that, it's going to break, you know, 6 feet left, or you're off, you know, got a downhill or an uphill or whatever it might be. It's kind of irrelevant. Do you have any tips for green reading when it comes to, you know, the short game and kind of mapping out, you know, your shots?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, green reading is such a great skill to have, but I would say in general, if you think about most golf courses, the greens are going to be pitched from back to front, right? It's like the course designers are thinking about, okay, well, if someone's hitting a 4-iron into here, I can't pitch the green this way and then have the ball land here, and no one's going to have any fun doing that. So most greens in general are pitched from back to front. So that's the first thing that you should always be kind of thinking of is like, in general, 95% of the time, the greens are going to be pitched from back to front. So your low point, where the golf balls are always going to want to sort of fall to in general, is going to be the front of the green. Now, there's going to be some like little, you know, tricks in the greens and whatnot. And so there's going to be sort of these micro greens within the major green. But one of the biggest things to always pay attention to is see, even if you're hitting a chip or if you're hitting a putt, see if you can find where dead straight putt would be. Just walk around the hole and see if you can find where dead straight's going to be. And usually, if you've got a 15-footer, there's going to be a dead straight putt on the high side of it and on the low side of it. So if your ball's over here, you're going to know that this thing's going to be breaking from right to left down to the low part. So you go to where the low part is and you see like, okay, this is straight. Okay, well, now my golf ball's over here and I'm putting to this hole. I know that it's going to break from right to left because the low point is down this way. But if you can find straight, you can then feel like, okay, well, if I'm just to the right of straight, it's going to break slightly right to left. If I'm just to the left of straight, it's going to break left to right. If you can develop that skill to find a straight putt on a green, that's going to be the most impactful skill for you.
Yeah, well, I hadn't thought about that. I don't know why I never thought about the pitching always being from back to front. I was literally going through my home course where I play every day, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, that's pretty much every green, maybe with the exception of one. But yeah, that's correct.
Almost every golf course is back to front, because the golf course designers, they want the ball to be able to land and be able to somewhat stop. If you're hitting a 4-iron, 5-iron, 6-iron, 7-iron, they want the ball to be able to like hit into that slope and grab and stay on the green. That's the fun. That's the fun part of it.
Yeah. Well, I know I got to let you go. Great stuff as always, Parker. It was a pleasure to meet you. I'm sure we'll run into each other again. Where can everybody find you if they haven't already? Obviously on Instagram, you got your own website. I imagine people can book both online and in-person lessons through all your channels.
Yep. Absolutely. In-person lessons, like you did are super fun. But yeah, my online portal, shortgamechef.com is where all my best information lives.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you very much for joining. Hopefully it won't be the last. Enjoy whatever you're doing today. I'm jealous. It's about 80 degrees warmer from where I'm at right now. So whatever you're doing, enjoy it. And hopefully you have a good rest of your day. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. Thanks, Parker. See ya.
Bye, buddy.